We've been studying about marriage, or listening to what Jesus have to say about marriage last week. And what are your expectations of marriage? Now, for those of you who are not married, please raise your hands. All right, you can be excused. You can join the junior Sunday school. Nah. Today, marriage concerns you just as much as it concerns the rest of us who are married. We are married for various reasons. And we have expectations. What are your expectations? What are the world's expectations? And last week we learned that people out there in the world do not have a clue what marriage is all about. To them, it's something they see out of Hollywood. That's marriage. And if that's your idea of what marriage is, then you haven't got a chance. Because look at what's happening in Hollywood. Nothing stays together. And today, what are your expectations of marriage? What are the world's expectations? Is it the same? Can it be the same? Take a look at some stats which comes out from the US, because Singapore, it's too small and too far in between that people conduct studies like this. In the year 2005, married couples became the minority. People who stays together, cohabitate, people who live together, living together all over Europe. It is in fashion. Men and women would have sex, and they call this friends with benefits. Have you heard of this term? How many of you have heard of this term? All right, friends with benefits. That means no need to get married, just stay together and we enjoy the benefits. Whether it's sex, company, or meals, free meals together, you have the benefits. But hey, don't talk about the responsibilities. Friends with benefits. So being married is no longer fashionable. And less than 25% of those who are married have got children from that union. Which means 75% of homes in the US are made up of couples who came together with children from the previous marriage. 75%. And listen to this. 94% of all sex on TV that you and I watch today happens between people, men and women, who are not married. And if you and I buy into all this, very soon in our minds, we will accept it. We will come to believe that it is all right. It is all right. But it is not all right. And that is the condition of the world today. Society is breaking down because families are breaking down. And today, you and I, Jesus has called us to be different. And I hope you listen up, even though you're not married, because this is going to be your foundation for a successful marriage. And if you ignore this, you can, but you are the one who's going to pay for it dearly. And this is what we are seeing today all around us. People are hurting because families are breaking up. Families are breaking up. And Jesus wants us to be different. And remember, Jesus is speaking to his disciples. And he's telling them how they should be conducting themselves so that the watching world can see. They can see a difference in you. If there's no difference in your lives and my life, then why are we wasting time? You and I might as well just go out there, spend time in the video arcade or go down to Disneyland and spend the rest of our life there and have fun and wait to die. But Jesus wants us to be different. And these statistics are just so sad. They're so sad. And while we may say that these statistics are, you know, the Americans, you know, crazy Americans, they do all kinds of crazy things. I wish I can say that it is not true here in Singapore. I wish I can say that it is not true here in the churches in Singapore. It is true. It is the same. The divorce rate here in Singapore and in the churches here in Singapore, it is the same. So where do we go from here? Why is this happening? Because we really have a serious problem here in Singapore. And I can think of three reasons why marriages are not working. It is number one, as we've said, because they do not know. Because they do not know God's plan, God's design for marriage. They haven't got a clue how marriage is going to work. All they can think of is, let's hook up, go to the altar and say, I do. And then after that, just enjoy sex and have babies. And after that, what else do you do? Is that marriage? That's their idea of marriage. But they do not know what is God's design for marriage. Secondly, some people do know, like us, we do know, but we don't follow it. We don't think that God really knows what is happening here. Lord, you know how tough times are right now. Do you know the in-laws that I'm staying with? Do you know the wife that I wake up to in the morning? Life is tough, you know. And then they just do not and are not willing to obey what God has to say to them. And today, we're going to open the Bible as always, as every Sunday we do, and you are going to hear what God has to say. And my challenge to you today is whether would you be willing to obey, to follow what God has designed for all of us in such a relationship. Thirdly, and I think this is true of all of us, why marriages do not work out. And it is because we have unrealistic expectations. Unrealistic expectations when we go into such a relationship. I'm going to give you seven of them very quickly. And some of them are really funny. All right? You can laugh at it, but the frightening thing is that some of us believe in it. We think it's true. Let me give you the seven. Number one, my partner is everything I've ever dreamed a spouse should be. How many of you think that this is your dream girl? This is your knight in, you know, shining armor. Nah. And you and I know that this is not true. After 3 days into marriage, you know it is not true. Number two, the key to long-term marital success is romantic love. You know, romance and romance. It will sustain our marriage if we are romantic all the time. Every day, roses and chocolates. That would be nice, isn't it? All right? Now, I'm not saying that there shouldn't be romance after 20 years of marriage. In Evelyn and myself, we still have a lot of romance, a lot of sparks. I will share with you a bit later. And you can ask her. Sparks. Sparks are the beginning of a small fire. Number three, they lived happily ever after. That's what we like to think. After marriage, we live happily ever after. Number four, being a Christian solves all marriage problems. You're wrong. It doesn't. It may be easier when you have Jesus Christ, but when you are both followers of Christ, it doesn't mean that your problems will disappear. Number five, I can work on my spouse, I can change him, and you know this is the furthest thing from the truth. When one young man and one young woman stand at the altar and when they say, I do, the in the girl's mind is, I'm going to change him. And 10 years down the road, she's so disappointed because he didn't change. It's so hard to change this man. But the reverse is true too. The young man looking at the sweet girl in all her glory and the best finery, the clothing, the bridal gown, and he look at her and in a dreamy look and say, oh, I wish you wouldn't change. Just stay like that, so pretty, so gentle, all your life. And 10 years later, man, look at her. Can't even fit into size 36, you know. And this is all true about us. We cannot change our spouse. We cannot. You can try, but you will fail. Men and women are basically the same. How many of you know it's not true? Men are from... Women are from... And a marriage is made in... heaven! That's what we all think, isn't it? Lastly, my partner can and will meet all my needs. Let me tell you something. I cannot meet Evelyn's need. Only Jesus can. And only Jesus can meet the need of your spouse. We are not able to. Some, yes, but not all the needs and not all the time. Many of us enter marriage with a false thinking. We are so euphoric after the wedding ceremony and everything, you know, and only to discover that my spouse is just as selfish as I am. We are all selfish people. And this is where the beginning of all our problems. Today, some of us sitting here, we may be struggling with our relationship in our marriages. Some of us may be having an affair. Some of us may be struggling with pornography. Some of us may be struggling with finances. Some of us may be struggling with just getting along. But today, I just want to tell you that God offers us hope. There is hope in God. And today, maybe some of us, even as a follower of Christ, we know it's wrong to divorce. God hates divorces. He hates us. He hates divorces. And today we may have in our mind make up and we say, yes, I'm not going to divorce. But life in this marriage is like a hell, like living through hell day in and day out. But you know what? Marriage to God, God has designed it to be a glimpse of heaven, to give us a little experience, a little taste of what heaven should be like on earth. And today, I think what is more important, rather than to ask, what is my expectations coming into this marriage? I think the more important question is, what are God's expectations for my marriage? And if you're to pay attention to what God has to say to us concerning His expectations for our relationship here, we will do well. Because the good news is, let me tell you that God's expectations, and when we look at them, I want you to remember that those expectations are realistic and they are doable and it is possible, and God wants us to have them. They are realistic, unlike our own expectations. And God is there to help us achieve all these expectations. We're going to look at 7, maybe for today. And understand this, that God has designed our marriages to succeed. God has designed our marriages to work. And today, some of us may be hitting some rough patches, but we can work on it. And we have got God there to walk us through it. So I'm going to give you 7 of God's expectations. But like I said, we'll have time only to do 4. And remember, they are realistic and they are always possible. They are always possible. Remember that God doesn't call us to do something which is beyond our ability. He always empowers us. He always helps us to achieve them. So they are realistic and they are always possible. Number one, God expects to build our marriage the way He designed it. The way He designed it. Psalm 127 verse 1 tells us, unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord builds the house, you and I will be wasting our effort. This is what David is saying in this verse. And you and I, when we look at a relationship that we enter into, understand this, that this relationship has got to be a relationship that has got right smack in the middle. Last Sunday, we have studied about what was the design of... Marriage. What is marriage? Marriage is designed by God, number one. It is designed by God. No one else thought of it. It was God who first instituted marriage in Genesis. And marriage was designed by God also to be a threesome. The man, the woman, and God. And we saw the triangle, how if each have a healthy and correct relationship with God, they will be drawn closer and closer and closer together as they come closer to God. And Ecclesiastes 4:12 tells us, a threefold cord is not quickly broken. A threefold cord. You understand this, right? On your own, you can be broken easily. 2 can be broken, and 3, it is not quickly broken. And God has made us to enter into such a relationship where God is really a part of it. Thirdly, marriage was designed to be monogamous. One man, one wife. Right from the beginning. I've got some Christians coming up to me and say, are you sure? Where did God say that it is to be such? Remember, when God created Adam and gave Eve, God didn't create Susie and Lucy. God didn't do that. God created only one man and one woman. Marriage was also designed by God to be heterosexual. A man marrying a wife. A man marrying a woman. Heterosexual, all right? When God created Adam, He didn't create Steve, He didn't create Robert, He created a woman. Marriage was designed to be heterosexual. And lastly, marriage was designed by God to be permanent. forever and ever until death do you part. So that was what we saw last Sunday. And this is how God designed it to be, that he must be a part of this relationship. And if today you want to just throw this out of the window, it's fine. And today, if you want to date an unbeliever, and you know, you say to me, Pastor John, you know, I know he's an unbeliever, but I'm sure I can get around to bringing him to church. Nothing good is going to happen. And if today you say, you know, somehow by my life, I'm going to win him over. I know he's not a believer. I know God is not pleased. You know what? Nothing good is going to happen. If today you and I were to deviate from God's design and plan, remember, the only thing that awaits you is a lot of pain, a lot of and more pain in your life, because nothing good is going to happen. Because you have disobeyed God. Number two, what does God expect for our marriages? He expects to help us and maintain our marriages. He's going to help us. And in marriage, you and I, we need to constantly go to God and depend on him. That's what he wants us to do. And in marriages, let's not kid ourselves. It is hard work. Even when we have God walking beside us, he expects us to work at it. Marriages, it doesn't finish at the altar. It continues and you work at it. Day by day, bit by bit, you work at your marriages to make it work. Matthew 7:24-27, we have studied this passage. Jesus himself said, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And when the rain came down and the stream arose and the winds beat and blew and beat against the house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. And you know what happened to the other house that's built on sandy sand? It collapsed and the loss is great." So is our marriages. We put so much into this relationship. Whenever I think of Evelyn, you know, when many years ago when I used to travel for work, I go to places like Hat Yai, Bangkok, and you know, Medan, and whenever there's this temptation to want to just have a one night fling and have fun and then wipe my mouth and come back and nobody would know, I always remember how much Evelyn loved me and how much she has given into this relationship. And why would I want to just throw it all away? Why? It's stupidity. And we need to work at our marriages. And I'm serious about this. We have to work at it. It doesn't come easy. You don't sit in front of the TV and with your remote control and keep surfing the channels and, you know, you have a wonderful marriage. I'm not against watching TV. I watch a lot of it. But what about your wife? What about your family? You have to work at it. It doesn't stop at the altar. Someone once asked this question: what are the most difficult years of marriage? When I put up my right hand, it means I'm soliciting, I'm encouraging some answers. No price, I must say. All right. Anybody? What are the most difficult years of marriage? Guess. Some say what? What? First 3 years. Wing Seng is the wisest man here. All right. If you need any help, sorry, Jaen, what did you say? Oh, you raise your hands. The first 3 years because of you. No, I'm sorry. I apologize. You and I know that the most difficult years of marriage are the ones that follow the ceremony. And it gets tougher. Unless you and I, we work at it. All right? And God, remember, God always wants and He expects our marriage to be fulfilling and to be healthy. He wants our marriages to be healthy and an enjoyable relationship. Number three, God expects marriage to be a covenant. And I'm going to pause a bit here because this is so critical. And I want you to understand this, that marriage is not a contract. This not a business contract. It is not even an agreement. Because today we use the word agreement loosely to mean a contract where two persons agree to do something. But marriage, in the sight of God, is a covenant. And what is a covenant? Ryan, you raise your hand. No. What's a covenant? Oh, you're just stretching. All right. I thought, wow, I'm impressed. Ryan knows what's a covenant. Anybody? What's a covenant? We use the words all the time, you know. New Testament. The New Testament is a new covenant. The Old Testament, the word testament, is a covenant too. All right? Okay. Malachi 2:14 tells us God is saying to His people, to the Jews, He says, you ask, why? It is because the Lord is acting as the witness between you and the wife of your youth, because you have broken faith with her, though she is your partner, the wife of your marriage covenant. The wife of your marriage covenant. What was God answering? What was the question that the Israelites were asking? They were really asking, God, why is it that my offering to you has not been accepted? Or today we may be asking the same question, but in another way. We may be asking, God, why is it that my prayers have not been heard by you? Every time I pray, it's like talking to the wall, Lord. Why? And God's reply was, it is because the Lord is acting as the witness. God is watching between you and the wife of your youth because you have broken faith with her. You have not kept your part of your promise to her, though she is your partner, the wife of your marriage covenant. What is a contract? What is an agreement? A contract is between two people. An agreement is between two parties to exchange something, whether it's goods or services. That is a contract. And if at any time, if you fail to deliver on the contract, then it frees the other party up. That is a contract. But marriage is not a contract. Marriage is a covenant, a commitment of permanent love and faithfulness between three people. And you say, what? Three? There is God. Never forget God. Let me just contrast contract and a covenant in this way. A contract limits our responsibilities and protects our rights. In a covenant, we give up our rights and we assume our responsibilities. It means we take on our responsibilities. This is the difference. In a contract, there is a limit as to what I need to do for you. There is a limit. And today, maybe in Singapore, we don't hear so much of this. But in the States, before anybody get married, they always have this thing called the prenuptial contract. The prenuptial, that means pre means before, nuptial means the marriage. Before the marriage, they must agree that if we were to part ways, if we were to divorce, you will have nothing. Because what I'm afraid is today you're marrying me for my money. So they must have this prenuptial. And let me tell you that in Singapore, I've not heard of it yet. All right? Maybe there is. But in a church, if you come to me and you say, Pastor, will you marry me? Sure. And if you have a prenuptial, I will tell you, no, I will not marry you. Because right from the starting block, you are already saying this marriage is not going to work. If you have a prenuptial. In the same way today, when I counsel people, I always tell them that, hey, when you get married, you must have a joint account. Right? If you still want to live apart, have separate accounts, then you might as well not get married. Because you're still living separate lives and you're still thinking for your own. What is a covenant? In the Old Testament, you would remember that when God made a covenant with Abraham, he asked Abraham to cut into half animals and place them opposite, facing each other. And there is a passage. And the two persons who enter into this covenant will walk between the two halves. And this is to say to God that, God, if ever I break this covenant, you do to me as I have done to these animals. And it's serious. It means death if you ever break the covenant. And you remember when God made this covenant with Abraham, God caused him to sleep. And it was God who walked through it himself. And it is God who says, I am going to fulfill this covenant myself. And today, I have to remind you that the word covenant, it has another shade of meaning. And this meaning, it means to cut. Right? Covenant is not just an agreement that both parties enter into. Yes, it is commitment, but commitment comes after this covenant is made. But a covenant, when made, it means to cut. And you and I must remember that when God entered into his covenant and when we enter into this covenant, it is a covenant that we have talked about while in camp. You remember the word hesed, which means loyal love, faithful love, the love that will not let go. So that really is what a covenant is all about. It is about you and I giving up our rights and taking on our responsibilities. It is you and I going into a relationship, a lifetime of commitment, of unconditional love to an imperfect person forever. The person that you're marrying is imperfect. And we close the back door of divorce. There is no back door. There is no going back. If you look at the houses in the time of Jesus, there were no back doors. Today we have got plenty of back doors. And when people enter into a contract, what they do is always how they safeguard their own assets, it limits their responsibilities, and they are constantly looking for loopholes to get out of the contract. Marriage is not a contract. Marriage is not something you get out of. Marriage is about going into it with commitment to an imperfect person forever and asking yourself, how can I contribute? How can I help the other person to be a better person? How can I improve his life? But sadly, today, all of us were just merely focusing on how are you going to meet my needs? And we start to talk selfish. How are you going to make me happier? How are you going to help me achieve the things that I want to achieve in life? But it should be the other way around. It should be you looking at your spouse and say, how can I help you to be the person that God wants you to be? That is a marriage. And let us today, as we start homes, as we start a new family, let us seal up the back door. Let us seal up. There is no back door. There is no going out, going back on what you have said and committed yourself to do. Strangely, I do not know how many of you have ever noticed that when you are put into a situation when there is no escape, when there is no other way out, then you start to think, how am I going to solve this problem? Isn't it? If there's a back way out, you want to kick this problem aside and run as far away as possible from this problem. Not too long ago, we've got two incidences where a Soviet submarine got into trouble and they sank right to the bottom of the ocean. And there's just no way out. The oxygen level is dropping so quickly. I think there are about probably 20-something or 30 over crew in it. There's just no way out. There is only one hatch, one opening. A hatch that has got a hatch that can be opened by rescue teams. And that is the only way out. But nobody came, and they all died. But what was really interesting was when they recovered the bodies, they found a lot of notes that these people all wrote because they knew they were going to die, and there's no way out. Today, what would you say to your wife? What would you say to your husband? There's no way out. If today you're in a big crisis, what would you say? I can tell you what those people do. They say things like, you know, I'm so glad for you, what you've done, and thank you, and forgive me, and all that. And that's the things that you and I need to be saying to each other all the time. When we are in a wrong, or even sometimes we may not be in a wrong, but to restore the relationship, we need to be saying, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you. These are words that heals, these are words that restore, because there is no way out of our marriages. Lastly, God expects oneness. God expects oneness in our relationship. It means companionship, yes, but it means also a team. A team. Look at the word team. Is there a word, the letter I in it? There's no I in it. It is a team. It is two persons coming together and their lives merging into one. And you have lost your identity. Yourself has died. Many times when you go, when you go to a wedding, they will have this unity candle, isn't it? One big candle right in the middle. And then this young man and this young woman, each will have their small little candle. You know, and then they will all both walk up to this big unity candle and both of them will light it together. Right? After they light it together, what do they do? Sorry? They blow out, yeah. Each of them will have to blow out their own candle. Blow out your candle today. Many of us are still walking around with our candles. We're living for ourselves. How I can satisfy my own selfish needs? It's me, it's I. But you need to blow out your candle. God said in Genesis 2:24, and we've been in Genesis because Jesus himself took us back to Genesis, and that's where it all began. And that's the blueprint of God for our marriages. That's where his design is. Genesis 2:24 says, "For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh." Notice what God is saying. For this reason, that means when you're married, a man will leave his father and mother. A man must leave. How many of us left our parents already? Or we are still tied to their apron strings? Any small problem? Mummy, mummy, what should I do? You should leave and cleave. Be united to your wife. And both will become one flesh. What is leaving? Leaving simply means you're now setting a priority on your new earthly relationship. That means your spouse, and your spouse will have to be number one after God. God is number one, and after God, it is your spouse. It is not your children. It is not even your career. It's not even your friends or parents. And today, many relationships are in trouble because in this marriage, they brought into their marriage the grandparents, they brought into their marriage their relatives, and I've got friends, when they want to buy something, they will have to consult their grandparents and the relatives. And you know what happens after that? Everybody will be telling him to do 10,000 different other things. And the only thing that he goes back to is at home at night, he will be quarreling with a wife. "Oh, my grandauntie said this. I must, and she wants me to do this." No, the wife will say, no, my mom said this is better. And on the bed, that's where the battle continues until the morning. And what an exciting life. Is that what God calls us to be? No. You have to leave. Your family is your family. You are the head of the house. And your wife is your partner, your team. Work with her. Throw the rest out, including the grandparents. And I think grandparents are the most difficult people. They're nice. You know, soon I'll be a grandparent also. Except there are exceptions, of course. But remember, your spouse is number one in your life. Your spouse is number one in your life. And, you know, that is a command from God. And it's the same for me too. Evelyn is first in my life. Not you guys. I love you. I love to shepherd you. But she's number one in my life. So there'll be times when I'll have to say no to you. And if I cannot be obedient to God, then I cannot be the person that God wants me to be. Does that make sense? I hope it does. And today I hope that you will change your thinking. Your wife must be number one in your life. And for you, like I say, I love to be your pastor. But Evelyn is first in my life. You can always find a better pastor than me, but I cannot find a better wife. Today, you know, sometimes we find it's a bit awkward to say this is very unnatural, but we need to practice it. Your wife is your first priority after God. And make sure that career doesn't overtake this. And, you know, I have to say this to myself. Because many times, I must tell you, Evelyn does complain that, you know, I'm not spending enough time with her. And I have to work at this, just like any of you. You may have your own problems it comes in other shapes, but you have to work at it. And The other problem is children. Sometimes, you know, we're so engaged in their lives. We spend so much time in their lives. But there must come a time when you must allow your children to go. You must let them go when they're old enough. All right? But in our culture today, yes, a lot of our children stay with us, maybe even into their marriage if they need some help financially or otherwise. But eventually, we must encourage them to set up their own homes. They must decide what they want to do in their own home. And when they are married, they must cleave. And what is cleave? Cleave is being united, being bonded, being glued. All right? Two persons glued together forever. And what is this gluing agent? It is God. It is God who must hold us together. So cleaving, it means to hold on tightly. And there is a decision made. It's a choice that you make. And it is a commitment that you see through. And today, the only difference between a healthy marriage and one that is not the absence of problems. It is not the absence of quarrels. We all have our quarrels. We all have our differences. But the only difference between a healthy marriage and one that is not is the presence of a commitment. Two persons realizing that there is no back door, and two persons deciding to make it work with God's help. It is a decision. It is not about our feelings, emotions. Today, I feel good. Let's get married. Tomorrow, I don't feel good. Let's part ways. Let's have a divorce party. Celebration. Tell people we are no longer together. That's what the in America they are doing. I don't know whether they do it here. I'm sure we do. You know, emotions change like the weather. But a commitment is like an anchor. A commitment anchors you to that relationship. And you and I know too well that that anchor is Jesus Christ. And if you do not have Jesus Christ in your relationship, your relation, this marriage will be just flipping and flopping around in the waves. Make Jesus the anchor of your relationship. Story was told of a man. He was celebrating his 60th wedding anniversary with his beautiful bride. For 60 years they've been married, and some friends came and they put together a small party of them. By which time they are already in their 80s. And the husband stood up, held a cup to toast his beautiful bride. And with tears brimming in his eyes, he said, "After 50 years, I found you to be tried and true." He was almost in tears. And the wife cupped her ear because and said, "Huh?" But the loving husband knew that the wife's hearing is really not good, raised his voice, and he said, "After 50 years, I have found you to be tried and true." The wife got a bit upset, looked at him and shot back, "Yeah, after 50 years, I'm tired of you too." You and I know marriage is really tough, and only God knows how to make it healthy. Only God, and He wants to make it healthy. And today, if some of us look at our own marriages and it's not ideal, not what God has designed to be, have hope. Have hope. Because God can heal your marriage. Because that is His speciality. He heals marriages, He restores marriages, and He loves to see people coming together for you again. And today, you and I just need to look to the designer and ask him, and he will work on you. And God wants to work on you, not your spouse. He wants to start with me, not my spouse.